With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Saul Regis, and you're listening to Football Ramble. Hi, I'm Saul Regis. Hi,
I'm Saul Regis, and it's the Football Ramble. Woo! Here we are once again. Pete's here.
I am, yeah.
And Luke's here.
All right.
James or Jim is still in Edinburgh, we think.
What's he playing
He's
at?
He's taking the fucking piss of y'all.
Good start, good start. At the moment in the Premiership, there's a lot of transfers involving centre-backs at this moment in time. That's the inspiration for this question. Who is your favourite centre-back since the Premiership began? Who's played in the Premiership?
Has to be Premiership.
Yeah.
Well, he just has played in the Premiership.
Well, has played in the Premiership. I mean,
you
more
go
than...
first, Pete.
Andy Linegan, because he's, because he's got two rubbish brothers that weren't as good as him, but played kind of the same position.
Did that make him better?
Kind of, yeah, because he was like king brother.
He went on trials and scouts were watching him, and they're like, well, he's not that good. Have you seen my brothers? Like, oh, God, he's brilliant.
I'm easily the best Lennigan. He played for Hartlepool for like 100 matches. Then he went to Leeds and then Arsenal. But his brothers, David and Brian, one stayed at Hartlepool for quite a while, and the other ones, they played for like Whitby and stuff like that.
Pete, do you know how bad his brothers were? I never even knew they existed.
No, neither did I.
I'm going to guess, well, in which case, good answer.
They all went to my school.
Really?
Did they?
Yeah.
Excellent stuff.
Linegan.
I'm going to go for Paul McGrath.
Oh,
probably one of the best defenders I've ever seen. Admittedly, his best years were probably just before the Premiership, but he definitely played in the Premiership.
Yeah, Villa, wasn't he?
He was at United before that. But yeah, it's got to be. I mean, his performance, it's been said 1,000 times, but just to reiterate, his performance for Republic of Ireland against Italy in World Cup 94... super. The only other defensive performance I've seen anywhere near as good that I can think of right now was when Jonathan Woodgate was against Newcastle and they played against Marseille in the Champions League.
Yeah.
That was the most colossal performance. And not only that, the most cultured performance of centre-back I've seen as well. But Paul McGrath pips it for me. He won PFA Player of the Year as well. So for me, it's definitely Paul McGrath.
That's a strong contender.
Thanks.
I'm going to go for Tony Adams.
Oh, it's a very, very Arsenal-heavy bias. Two out of three are Arsenal players.
Yeah, well, that's what...
None of mine went out with Caprice, so...
No, it's true. Yeah. Me, I don't think Paul McGrath...
Which is the main reason why I've put him in. But, for longevity of career, for being a top centre-back for that long, and also for giving Martin Tyler a nice bit of commentary when he ran through on goal against Everton. Tony Adams, can you believe it?
Oh, yeah! Do you know how that would have been made better?
Tell me.
If it was Barry Davis saying it.
Well, of course.
Do you know how that would have been made even better if Philippe Albert did it?
Philippe Albert was another great shot.
He had a great cultured sort of outside of the right foot, outside of the left foot. He's a good player.
What about the dinker he scored against United?
Albert! Philippe Albert, everyone knows his name.
That was and he song. Had a moustache.
He did have
he had a
moustache.
He had a bullet left foot on him, from what I remember.
No, he was decent.
I loved him.
Oh, to be fair, our top league has been blessed. With centre-half, I think. For me, I can remember when I was growing up, and this wasn't Premiership, but when Andy Orford first broke into the Portsmouth first team, I mean, he was hotly tipped. He's like Portsmouth's youngest ever player. Mm. Like 15 he was when he made his debut. I think he was tipped as like a future England captain at one stage. Didn't really make it, but class. Absolute class, though. And there was also another player at Pompey called Lewis Buxton, never really did anything, but he made a few amazing appearances.
This is not just like mention... Portsmouth.
Well, no, I don't always do it. I just thought I'd just stick it out there. But do you boys know what I mean? When sometimes if you go and watch your club or whatever, or you're watching a few games on telly even, and there's a player that breaks through into the first team for the first time, and he's amazing for like three or four games.
Yeah.
So completely fearless. And after a while, maybe it gets worked out a little bit, or sort of the sort of novelty wears off a little bit to a certain extent, and they just don't really do much.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Buxton was one of them. But anyway, yeah, good question.
The thing with central defenders is like there's only two positions in the England squad where you can actually like with midfield you can sort of squeeze people in if you really really like them, but generally
that's right,
you've only got two centre-backs.
And to be fair, England are blessed with a lot of good centre-backs, you know, so it's definitely a difficult one because we've probably got five or six that you'd be happy with it at
behind
for
Rio
England.
Well, the other guy.
For me,
El Captino.
John Terry isn't in the top two centre backs in the
league. Who would you have?
No.
Obviously Ferdinand.
Ferdinand without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, of course. You're going to say.
Woodgate went fit.
Yeah, I knew
King went
fit.
And that's difficult for King, but. I just think the fact that this sort of conventional wisdom that you need a sort of stopper, a stick your head in anywhere defender alongside Ferdinand, I just don't think that's true.
I think if fit, I think it would be King and Ferdinand.
You do, yeah?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty that could play there. I mean, Lescott could play there, probably.
I'd put Woodgate in as a sweeper and have a three.
Would you? That's Venables. Yeah. Look at Venables over there.
That's what I'd do.
It's but not 1996.
He's great with the old last gasp tackle. He'll let the player go past him, but he'll get his foot round.
Yeah. I used to love doing that.
Get injured in the process. Do you know what, Pete? You've got the point.
Oh, come on.
For obscurity.
The Linnegans.
It's political.
The Linnegans. I've got the faders, oh yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was just the way your trousers hang.
He does have the faders indeed. Liverpool have had a dodgy start.
Another team that are fading away. Good. I'll leave a list to you.
Thank you very much.
I should have said John Scales, damn it.
What's going on? Liverpool, Benitez, he wants the players to step up.
I love Benitez. What Benitez has basically said is, oh, no, it's all the players, they're just rubbish now.
Yeah, well...
Come on, do better.
Yeah.
It's like Benitez works. Benitez gave up the football team talk equivalent of just going up to his players and just going, you know what you're doing, just do it better. Do it better. It's absolutely... All he said was, the senior players have got to step up. You know, I cannot believe... I mean, I said it before last week, I'll say it again this week. I cannot believe for one second that any educated, in quotes, expert on football outside of the general Merseyside area is touting Liverpool for the title. Not a chance.
No, I can't... Yeah, I agree with you. Well, they haven't signed anybody...
Of note.
And they've lost Alonso, of course.
Well, Aquilani, we don't know how he's going to... I mean,
he's injured.
We're going to be speculating about Aquilani for a while because he's injured. They've signed Kyriakos from AEK Athens.
Yeah, he had a season at Rangers.
But he's a centre-back anyway. So that says to me that he's a bit worried about Agger's overall fitness.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I mean, they've got to keep Torres fit.
Yeah.
I say they've got to as if it's in their own hands.
Yeah. But, put him in a presentation case after it's
Yeah, I think that some of the signings, just Babel's not quite done it for me. He's a funny player because he looks the part sometimes. He's got a bit of pace and but
is he one of those players who needs to play a lot? And at the moment, he's not. I'm sure people will email and correct me, but I don't know the situation behind his departure. But Sebastian Leto, who plays for Panathinaikos now, who's a left-sided wide player, he does cut in a lot. Very creative player. I mean, he played against Atletico Madrid this week. Mm. All right, they got knocked out, but he looked really lively and really good. And Benitez, I think, actually let him go. Yeah. Now, it may have been a work permit issue because he tried to apply for an Italian passport. I mean, I was reading up on it sort of last week. Yeah. He tried to apply for an Italian passport. I think it got rejected. And so he either couldn't play for Liverpool, I don't think he made many appearances at all, or Benitez has just got rid of him. Now, if Benitez has just got rid of him, then that's an absolutely woeful decision in my view. I'm not saying he'd be brilliant in the Premier League, but they need bodies. They need attacking players. And like we said last week, your point about Torres is right, but... they're not going to win the Premier League with Gerard and Torres alone.
No,
you know they've got a good goalkeeper in Reina. They've got Agger and Carragher, who went fit, are decent. Skelter's okay. Aquilani's okay.
Mascherano's
a great player. Because they've got a decent spine, but there's just absolutely nothing around that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Ben Ayoun's not a bad player.
Oh, he's okay. Yeah, he's the sort of player that makes things happen.
He's not going to
perform consistently throughout Premier League season, win you a title, is he?
Exactly.
No.
If we're not sort of tipping them for the title, where would we put them? That's what I ask.
I'd love to see them slip out the top four.
No, but
realistically,
the amount of hype they've had this season, it would be exciting to see them come fourth behind Manchester City.
Like to see Arsenal actually finish in the top four because they've not spent a lot.
But there's your three teams.
And they're playing excellent football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, of course, that's the main point I'm making is the football they play. And also, everyone's kind of written them off.
Well, your top three are Chelsea, United and Arsenal. And it's probably Chelsea, then United and Arsenal for me. But Arsenal are playing, again, I mean, at the risk of repeating myself again, Arsenal are playing like a team without any pressure on them. Mm, it's almost like they're a young team and they think that no one's really tipping them to win anything. But they're playing with such freedom.
They look like they're enjoying it. It's,
of course
it's
they are, yeah.
Beautiful to watch. Wonderful.
Definitely, no, I agree.
And they did a job against Celtic.
Yeah, they did. I think inevitably Liverpool are going to pick up and start winning games. But, I mean, they're not playing well. I mean, it's the beginning of the season, so you think they'll be up for it. I mean, they've not had a national tournament, most of them, apart from one or two of them. So, I mean, they should be fresh and ready to go, you know.
Well, it's early days.
Of course.
Portsmouth.
Yes.
Takeover.
That's a strange one, isn't it?
Was it?
Did you hear Peter's story? After my rant, he's been sensationally shunned by Alexander Gordon. I'm taking full credit for that. So the story I read, or the story that someone told me, that's since come out in the press, is that Story travelled up to...
You're not a fan of Story. I'm kind of reading between the lines here.
Absolutely not. You know that. He was invited up to London, I believe, to speak to Guy Demack, who was the owner of the club. I think he thought it was to put finalised details into him and this consortium taking over the club.
Yeah.
Guy Demack didn't turn up, so Story rang him. And God, it was like, oh yeah, sorry about that, Peter. I've just sold it to Sullivan Al Fayyim. So he was like, well, what do you mean?
You saw him on Sky Sports?
No, he did an interview with The Key, which is the Portsmouth. But the problem is with The Key, I mean, it's very Portsmouth centric, so I'll go really quickly. But The Key is co-owned by Portsmouth Football Club because they were going to go under, and Portsmouth gave them the money to stay afloat. So they're the only sort of real radio station. They're a small radio station, but they're the only ones that get sort of the interviews. And they can't really be, they can't cross-examine people. Do you know what I mean? They're quite sort of toe the party line. And they did a very sycophantic interview with Peter Stewart on The Key yesterday, I believe, when Story was giving all this bullshit about how it's all about the club, it's not about him, he's gutted, all this sort of stuff. I mean, the reason he's gutted is he's no longer going to be able to allegedly line his own pockets with exorbitant salaries that he can't justify, that apparently Portsmouth can't afford to spend on players, but they can afford to spend on him. You know, when you're turning over like tens of millions of pounds in losses at the club you're in charge of and still taking over £1 million of salary every year, then you can understand why he's a bit put out that he's no longer going to be part of it. And the beauty part of it is, just to wrap up, the last couple of weeks he's spent slagging off Sullivan Al Fayyim that you wouldn't believe because he thought he'd taken over the club himself, and now it looks like Al Fayyim's going to force him out. Well, there is justice, everybody. There's justice in the world of football.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. You're talking about a man in the kind of upstairs realm of a football club getting paid a lot of money. Notts County.
Sven.
Sol Campbell's gone there.
Inexplicable. No, applicable.
Yeah, I'll just
What are you thinking, Pete? He just loves a challenge. Yeah. We're all thinking that.
I'll be 39. We'll be in the Premiership. Yeah.
He's 34 at the moment.
Yeah, but when he's had a when they get there.
Five-year deal.
5-year contract.
Is it a 5-year plan Notts County are doing then?
My favourite fact about Notts County at the moment is that Kasper Schmeichel signed for them from City. Yeah. Man City, and he's on more money at County than he was at Man City.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do you know what the figures are?
No, but it's obviously quite a lot of money.
That's unbelievable.
I just like how the Notts County manager, Sol Campbell, explained. He said, I want to go into management, I want to go into coaching a little bit later on in my career. Not right now, a couple of years.
Yeah.
And the owner said, yeah, well, you know, I'm sure we'll find a role for him doing a little bit of coaching. And the manager was like, Sol has not mentioned this to me at all. He has not said a word.
So he's got a 5-year deal as a player?
As a player, yeah.
But he'll be comfortably the best player in that division, though, won't he?
Yeah, still, 38.
At the moment, for the next two seasons, he's going to be quality.
Well, I don't know. I mean, David Weir's just been signed. Not signed, he's been called up to the Scotland squad.
39.
But that is ridiculous.
I'm not suggesting Sol Campbell's about to get a call-up. I think Sol Campbell, I'd love to see him still playing at 38, 39.
He could, because they're in League Two. So if they don't get promoted in the next couple of seasons,
what's happening there, you know, with money being so important, I think they've got to be promoted.
But even if you're right, I still think Sol Campbell will be a decent championship player in 2 years' time.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think they've got a good deal with Kasper Schmeichel.
But he's just turned 35, though, isn't he?
He's
35 this week or something.
Is he? Okay, he's very soon, I know that, yeah. He's gone there for the money. He said he got offered more money in terms of a salary at Premiership clubs that he turned them down. But obviously the rub is that they weren't giving him five-year deals. So, I mean... The thing is, I'm not defending him, whatever, because I mean, lots of times when you do like a footy show, you have to sort of almost get not fall into the trap of defending the indefensible because football's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I mean, Sol Campbell, okay, so he's gone and followed the money. It's not done anything else that anyone else wouldn't do.
No.
He does get a lot of stick, doesn't he? I think it's probably because of the Tottenham Arsenal thing.
Yeah, I think so.
And then when he left Arsenal, he said he wanted to go overseas and went to Portsmouth.
But it's a shame because he could still do a job in the Premiership. Well, he was doing a job.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think so.
I think his legs are sort of gone now. I'd
like to have seen him this season and then have gone.
Yeah, okay.
I just sort of worry about the whole sort of spending a lot of money now in the second division. Why spend that much money now? Because you're only going to have to spend it again when you get into the league above and then again in the league above.
That's right,
And it's kind of... Mm-hmm. And you've still got Sol Campbell on a five-year deal.
I mean, Sol Campbell is going to be...
a five-year plan.
He'll be ridiculously good in League Two. Ridiculously good.
Well, I think that's it. I think...
Play him up front.
He used to play up front. He started off up front.
Tell you what, all we could see... I mean, you say his legs have gone, fair enough, but he won't be as... you know, it won't be so taxing at that level. Will we see the Sol Campbell surge forward?
Ah,
like we used
to. The Sol surge.
The rarest of treasures.
It was a real pearl because. And he nearly scored the greatest World Cup goal of England of all time when he took on the whole of the Colombian team and then slipped at the last minute in the 98 World Cup.
No composure.
Oh, dear. Oh,
that was.
Do you know who could teach him a lesson?
That was 11 years ago.
Do you know who could have taught him a lesson and taken on a whole team and slotting it? So EDOY ran.
Yeah, definitely. Or the.
You're thinking Diego Maradona?
I was going to say Andreas Townsend for Leyton Orient, who scored probably the goal of the season last weekend.
Andreas Townsend.
On loan from Spurs, where he literally started off over the far touchline in his own half. Probably beat six players, smashed it in the bottom corner.
Good.
It was one of those goals. I watched it on the highlights show, and it was like. It was a highlight for a Leyton Orient game. So you know they weren't going to show that many highlights. He picked up the ball and it was like, nah, he's not going to. He's not going to. Fucking hell. It's like one of those. Absolutely amazing.
Jermaine Defoe's been scoring some good goals.
He has.
Mm, he's been scoring a lot of goals.
Shows you what confidence does for a player, you know.
it absolutely does.
Because he don't think that goal he scored, the most recent goal he scored, I forget.
Well, Redknapp's got a lot of confidence in him.
Well, yeah, Redknapp for Walters Fox does give players confidence. Yeah. But Defoe, the last goal he scored, he just picked it up about 19, 20 yards out, just smashed in the top corner.
But he can do that, Defoe, sometimes. He can sort of pick something out of the bag. Mm. It's such a cliche thing to say, he just needs to be more consistent.
Yeah.
No, it's as simple as that, really. And slot away the... your regular kind of chances that just dropped you in the box. And because he will be knocking on the door for an England starting
boards,
place.
Bodes well for the World Cup.
Starting, I mean, so far, how Capello's been playing, a striker like him
may not.
Probably not.
But if he bangs in 25.
He's got 4 and 3 for Spurs, I think, and he scored 2 in his last game for England, didn't he? So.
I think he's scored more than Rooney this season.
Do you?
I've said it.
Rooney's a shoo-in for top scorer for me.
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. As long as Eduardo stops diving everywhere and winning penalties for himself. If he does that every week, he might be, but apart from that.
Well, we'll come on to Eduardo in a minute, but just sticking with Spurs, Harry Redknapp said that he likened Spurs... and the expectation of Spurs winning the Premiership to that of Real Madrid.
Yeah, of course he did, yeah.
And
checks out.
Mother of Satan.
Let me finish.
Well, because they both wear white kits.
And Real Madrid, because obviously Real Madrid have spent a few quid over the summer, so expectation of winning La Liga is going to be quite high with players like Kaká and Cristiano Ronaldo going there. and Harry seems to think that there is a direct comparison between the two clubs because of this.
Well, they both play football.
They do both play football.
Both are white.
And Woodgate.
Both in the capital city.
And everyone hates them.
Naughty.
No, I'm only joking. Not everyone hates them.
They're
just
Spurs
most
like
people.
Them. But, silly thing to do. What is it?
Was this in his son column, was it? I didn't fall to go back to Portsmouth.
Will Portsmouth look forward to him coming back?
I don't know, but what I do know is every time I see that advert, I'm almost physically sick.
Yeah.
And it says something when you're watching an advert and Ian Wright is the most likeable man on it.
Well, take a sick bag whenever you watch television. Yeah. Another sickening thing on television, West Ham v Millwall.
Well, that wasn't on television, but
Yeah, that's kind of what I was suggesting.
Fair enough. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Every time I see crowd violence and hooliganism, certainly in this country, somebody's always flinging darts. Yeah. Now, that is the most backwards fucking thing to do. Throw a brick. I don't care, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Darts piss me off.
It's
that could really fuck someone
and
up.
I know
they want to fuck people up, but a dart, come on.
Yeah. Come on.
They're expensive,
they are.
Somebody said to me this week.
We shouldn't really sort of dwell too much on it because there are probably people more learned and more... sort of better at commentating on it than us, but the bottom line is it's a sickener.
It's as Julian Dick said, it's an absolute disgrace, you know.
I think it is. I think we can all agree on that. I mean, when you get into sort of, it's not only the hooliganism and the mindless thing. The worst things for me were the alleged racism of Carlton Cole, and the other thing that stands out for me is that, as always, like when we talk about clubs going to administration and getting points deducted, in this situation, as always, the real fans, the families and the kids who go watch football are going to be punished, because it looks like probably what maybe happen is West Ham will either be fined a lot of money, which is no good for them,
or dumped out of the competition maybe.
Or have to play behind closed doors, which regular people can't go and watch them. Now, I understand that it's a bit of a weird one, because I understand that they've got to control their fans, but then at the same time, how can you stop a bloke who's just from the area sticking a West Ham shot on and going and putting a shot window
in? It's not even that. Oh, we want they made 10 arrests. Was it 10 arrests? I mean, out of that many people, you saw on the bloody... Yeah. The 10 arrests, and it's sort of saying, well, they should be banned. The sports minister's saying they should be banned from every Premier League or league ground in the country. People having a tear up in the streets. They won't have even been at the match.
No, exactly,
And to be fair, I used to live in the New Cross Deptford area. You fucking knew when a Millwall match was on. On a sort of really sort of dour note, it's, you know what I mean?
But they're not all
like colourful.
There is an element of fans there, but
well, I hope they can retrospectively start banning people with CCTV and stuff like that.
But the trouble is for the football club is, how can a football club change someone's attitude, you know, on a large scale, or someone's home life?
It's a more, social situation.
And as you say, but unfortunately it happens in the realms of football, and therefore if it does, then the footballing bodies have to deal with it.
It just gives us a bad reputation. Football fans, a bad reputation. It gives people who don't know anything about the situation a stick to beat football with, which is something that hasn't happened for a while now, because thankfully the worst of that's hopefully behind us, and it's just a real sort of unwelcome trip down Nightmare Lane. Not even Memory Lane, Pete.
Nightmare Lane. I've been down there.
It's rubbish.
I was touched. But just to wrap it up, I guess, the sad thing is, they see these firms having a scrap, a tear-up or whatever. That's only going to make other firms go, you think you lads can fight better than
exactly that. It's sick.
And it all
mate,
starts again, like the 80s.
I completely agree. And you know, the worst thing for me, one of the worst things for me today was reading the newspaper, and who's got a column talking about it? Cass Pennant, the guy who's probably done there's no one in this country who's done more to glorify that period of extreme hooliganism and violence amongst football games and made it acceptable, and in arguably something to aspire to for young people who read those books, saying, oh, you know, this is what's happened. Yeah, thanks, Cass. Fucking sling your rook, pal. And amongst all this, a terrible week for West Ham, really, all the best to Callum Davenport and his mother after that sickening, terrible knife attack.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah.
And Jack Collison as well, whose father died in a road accident. Awful scenes.
So, all the best. Joleon Lescott has finally gone to Manchester City.
Thank Christ.
£94,000 a week.
Really?
A lot of money, isn't it?
Not as much as Wayne Bridge.
No, is he got more than that?
Yeah, Wayne Bridge was on
He's 94.
I thought Wayne Bridge was on 100.
I don't know, but what's his name? Lescott is on £94,000 a week.
Really?
A 5-year deal,
It's ridiculous.
That's not bad, is it? In the region of sort of 22, 24 million, I think. Yeah. It's undisclosed. But
he is not a 24 million.
I think it's a good bit of business for Everton.
Yeah, but with Man City, it's like the money doesn't even matter, does it?
No.
Please, that's come to a conclusion.
Absolutely.
And Moyes, who I think is a good manager and probably quite a good bloke, hasn't lost his job and had to be a martyr about it. So, I mean, it's not ideal. I don't think it's a great advert for how Man City are operating, but I'm pleased Moyes has still got his job, and hopefully I can go out and find someone to replace him.
I mean, can you understand it from Lescott's point of view? Because you see, I mean, I look at that and I think there he is at a club that are building something. To be honest, slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. Well, you'd hope that, you know, final last year, fifth position, fourth not that long ago. You know, they're doing something, Everton. But Lescott said the reason why he's gone was because he sees Man City breaking at the top four quicker than Everton.
Yeah, well,
and obviously the money's
probably,
and obviously,
he's probably right to be.
Yeah,
well,
he probably is
well.
Right. And then the money's a big factor. But I mean, what do you make about that?
I think it's generally accepted that Everton aren't going to get any further than they've got without some severe investment, which I haven't got.
Yeah.
So I mean, it may be. You know, I think that the situation was Moyes and Everton probably didn't want to deal with Man City because of all it represented.
They didn't
want to sort of acquiesce.
For which
to them.
They'd probably be.
Yeah, no,
applauded,
fine.
As
but
we've
I
said.
Think in a way it could be a blessing in disguise because if they can take that money and then invest in two players for £10 or £11 million pounds each, who are quality players who aren't as maybe overpriced because Man City haven't bumped them up their value up and they're not English or whatever, and it could be a good thing. Mm. But you know, I don't blame Lescott. I don't blame any player to go out and get as much money as he can. You know, it's not a problem.
And he's in his peak years now. He's 27.
Yeah, he could have been more.
27.
I think he could have been more professional about it. And I think that, you know.
Yeah, I think that Moyes, he probably shouldn't have. Well, he said he regretted playing him against Arsenal, and unfortunately, that's the kind of the last impression that the Everton fans have got of him.
His head's not there. He's not at the club anymore in his head. Get rid.
Yeah.
Simple as that. You know, sometimes that's what happens. You know, it's sickening for the fans, sickening for the club, but it's sometimes what happens.
How much did Rooney go for from Everton?
A lot of money. 29 million or something like that.
Yeah, it was
and Lescott
to 30.
Is, yeah, close to 30. And Lescott goes for 25. That's ridiculous.
And Rooney was only 20 years old, 19 years old. Wasn't less than that. Yeah.
I'm just thinking Lescott's going to finish up. He's going to be 32 when the contract finishes. He can go to Notts County. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And by that time, they'll probably be in the Championship. And he'll form quite a formidable partnership with Joel Campbell.
The Champions League.
Sven would like to think so. Stephen Warnock's gone.
To Villa, I think that's a good signing.
It's a good signing, and possibly David Dunn maybe to Villa. I mean, obviously Aston Villa lost Larsson.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, who was a big player.
He was a big player. They could do with someone like David Dunn, a bit of a presence, a sort of a trusty centre back. I suppose. He's not as good as Larsson. I wouldn't have said
they definitely needed the players.
I think so. And Dunn's
numbers. It's a numbers game, mate.
Well, Dunn's probably looking at what's going on at City, and he's thinking, sod this, you know.
Yeah.
But that's not quite gone through yet. But looking though, maybe when this comes out, that's probably a done deal.
Warnock is a good sign.
A done deal.
Yeah, good.
Thank you.
Yeah, good.
Didn't even mean that.
No, that's how good you are.
Effortless.
Ramblers, do you remember a story that we did a few rambles ago now where we said that Nigeria were going to do age tests
for the
coming under-17 World Cup, which is being held in Nigeria?
We've got the results.
The results are in.
Why did they send them to you, Mark?
Who won? Who won?
Because I requested them. Out of 38 players that were in the pool for the World Cup under-17 squad for Nigeria, 15... I've dropped out because they failed these age tests, which were...
almost half.
Vindicated, some might say.
Yeah, yeah. So 23 have made it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. The president of the Nigerian Football Federation, he said the decision was taken because he wanted to preserve Nigeria's good image.
Well, they won it about three times, haven't they? They won it last time.
But I'm not sure the image is that good. The fact that they had to do the tests, and I don't think anybody else has to do them. But the coach is very confident that they have a team that will represent them very well at the under-17 World Cup, which kicks off at the end of October.
At the very least, they'll all be the correct age.
Yeah.
And that's the least we can hope for.
But they've just got to find someone to play up front with Kanu. So
they did the funny look. Did you see that? He went off like a bloody frog in a sock, mate.
Bloody sock.
And I want that frog back, thank you.
Did you see that Adrian Mutu put all his troubles behind him for 90 minutes and scored for Fiorentina against Bologna last week?
1-1, was it?
Yeah, it was 1-1, yeah.
Read your notes.
Well done to him. Bloody emails. Shall I do the first one?
If you would.
Hello, Ramble Force.
Hi.
I had tryouts for my high school soccer team last week, and during them, I literally scored a goal exactly like Drogba's chip against Hull.
Oh, come on. Did he mean it?
I'll tell you what he says. I received the ball by the right touchline and tried crossing with my left, and it somehow went in the top corner. It was amazing. However, I did not make the team, although I did get the position of assistant coach/team manager. And that's Zach from Michigan.
Hang on, he scored a goal like that and he didn't make the team?
America, they do things wrong.
But he's, I was going to say, but he is the manager, he's in charge.
Yeah.
Well, no, he's assistant coach/team manager.
Team
manager.
Oh.
Yeah. Zach from Michigan. Thanks very much, Zach.
Yeah, well done, Zach.
It's quite good goal. I didn't see it, but probably great.
Next email, Pete, you've got it.
I have, yes, Marcus, thank you very much. This is from one Richard Cook from Scotland.
Hello.
Dear Rambleforce.
Oh!
Oh, indeed. Whilst watching the matches of the weekend on Match of the Day, it got me thinking a great way to promote the Football Ramble would be to challenge supporters of all the different teams to get banners and flags, etc., up at football games with the Ramble address.
Or I like love
Ramble,
that.
Or Ramble Force. Ho!
I immediately love that.
I couldn't agree more.
And just see how many times that the Football Ramble, Ramble Force, ho!
Yeah.
Gets featured at
Match of the Day.
On Match of the Day or the Football League Show or that, something like that.
That sounds amazing. Do it. Everyone do it.
Everyone
I'll,
do it.
I'll
do
send
it,
a lunch. Facebook message out and a Twitter and that sort of stuff. Everyone, if you go to a game regularly or you've got a season ticket, make up a bed sheet or a banner or whatever, Ramble Force hole on it. Get photo and video evidence. So then if it doesn't make it on the telly, we can put it up on the website and stuff.
Yeah.
Get cracking.
Or if you're a Millwall fan and you're pitch invading,
oh,
just lift, come
there.
On,
no,
throw
come
a branded
on.
Rock at someone. A ramble
on.
Rock. A ramble rock.
A ramble rock. Terrible stuff.
Yeah, that's I'm going to do the next email. I've decided. How's it going, Ramblers?
All right, not too bad, yeah.
All right, yeah.
I'm a 12-year-old boy.
I'm clipping that. That's getting played back. Mark is saying, I'm a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, I've just had a paper round in Baghdad.
Yeah.
I'm a 12-year-old boy and I love listening to your show. Makes me chuckle when I hear all of you laugh about the stupidest things. There's nothing stupid about this podcast.
It makes me feel guilty about swearing.
Yeah, we need to be more responsible human beings.
You do.
In life, really.
Or they need to be more responsible parents.
Don't you say that about my son. He says, I am currently playing for the Arsenal Academy and have met good. Diego Maradona.
No.
Has he played in the Arsenal Academy?
Really? He's not Nigerian.
Not at the moment. He is a very religious man who is very caring. To be honest, I was quite freaked out by him, really.
What? Where's this going?
I just wanted to know if any of you Ramblers have met him and what you think of him. I've never met him. I'd bloody love to. He's a nutter. I like him.
I love him. Pete also loves him.
Yeah, never met him.
What do you think of him, Jim? Yeah, I like him. Jim likes him as well. So.
Have you met him, Jim?
Probably.
Thanks, Simon. Nice one. That's awesome. Well done. We've achieved something we haven't achieved.
Lukey, last email.
How do midweek ramble force? Recently, you've been placing the future careers of Jack Wilshere, Stephen Taylor, Lee Cattermole, and all those other players firmly on a pedestal, and rightly so. Which got me thinking, which young footballing prodigy, when first seen perform, got your initial football juices flowing, only to be disappointed when the older version of the player turned out to be as much use as Captain Hook at a gynecologist convention?
No, that's not a nice...
No, come on.
Come on.
You can do better than that. My initial thoughts are Gus Caesar. We all remember Gus Caesar. I won't bore everyone with that.
Gus Caesar, remind me.
Gunners, Arsenal, centre-half, utility player, really. Was really good in like the mid-80s and then turned rubbish. And according to Ed, the emailer, wrote that he was voted number 3 in the Times poll of the 50 worst footballers to play in the English top flight.
Really?
So, players who've promised lots, delivered nothing. I can imagine there's going to be a lot of Newcastle players in here. Off you go, Pete.
Well, a fella that scored at the weekend again.
He's found his level.
He's found his level. Shola Ramiobi.
There must be a chart around that. By the way, Newcastle, have a pop at Shola Ramiobi if you want. Lazy journalism. 3-2 down. Tactical mastermind, Chris Houghton or Houghton, whatever it is, sticks him on. Bang, bang, 4-3. Cheers.
No, bang once. He scores a penalty. That's not.
They all count. There's no picture on the score sheet.
As Eduardo knows, they all count, and I'm having that.
Yeah.
Shola Ramiobi.
I'm going to go for Danny Cadamartari.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Danny Calamari. Brilliant.
And Michael Owen. Lols.
Stop it right now.
Sorry.
Apology accepted. Jody Morris.
Yeah, good. Hey. Yeah, good. He's at Dundee or something now. I've been in Scotland somewhere.
Yeah, I know a chap who used to play in the Chelsea Youth with him, and his words about Jody Morris was he was frighteningly good.
Okay.
And there was a lot of players who were currently on the scene playing, obviously, at that level then, and he said Jody Morris was ridiculously good. Never achieved.
Didn't have a desire.
Frighteningly good. Maybe he scared himself into being banned
and really small.
He scared off his first touch.
Yeah. Stephen Hughes as well.
Yeah, not bad.
Ex-Arsenal.
Franny Jeffers is another one.
Oh, yes.
If we're going to talk about goalkeepers, we'll probably have to talk about Richard Wright. Or me, actually. I'm quite a good keeper.
I wouldn't, yeah. Richard Wright.
He's back at Ipswich now, isn't he, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What about Ryan Ricketts?
Oh, yeah. What's popping? I'm Roy Ricketts.
What's popping?
What's popping indeed?
Good, good emails indeed.
Cheers.
Not from you, though.
what was that?
Matt. Just joining in.
A little happy noise.
Pete's saying to one of those things from Fraggle Rock.
How dare you?
Oh, I didn't mean that.
Yeah, this is going to be the first time from now on that we are going to be giving away a Championship Manager goodie bag to the best email, because the boys at Championship Manager have been very kind and are giving us some lovely things to give away.
To our listeners.
That's
yeah,
right.
Is this the first time we've ever given anything away?
Yeah.
I think so, without asking for anything back.
Well, they've kind of given us something back, haven't they? Because they're actually in the new game, Championship Manager 2010. It's out 11th of next month, I believe.
Yeah.
And we're in the game as kind of like a media sort of media moguls, aren't we?
We're now official friends with Championship Manager.
Yeah.
How about that? we're mates. So get your emails in. And
you could be walking away with like a bag full of swag.
Yeah,
swag bag.
Marcus, why don't you pick? Because you're the man in charge.
Yeah, it's got to be Richard from Scotland. Oh, the Ramblers
of Scotland.
Richard from Scotland. We'll email you. You'll get your Championship Manager goodie bag. Ho!
I'm going to give him a Ramble Force. Ho!
That's an expensive old bag send, that is. Yeah. Scotland, come on.
Yeah. They didn't count on that, did they? Bloody good job Zach from Michigan didn't win, I tell you.
Yeah, it's probably worth mentioning, full disclosure in that, Ant and Dextile. If you are in America, you're probably not going to win that Championship Manager. I mean, it's a bag full of stuff. It's nothing to
But do email eBay-ish. In anyway. But still email in.
We'll do please.
As many as we want, as many as we can get.
See me. Oh, funny stories.
Pete. Why don't you go first?
Why don't you... All right, then.
All right, you...
Hey, come on.
This one's about footballing legend Diego Maradona.
I can't believe he's done something stupid.
It's not what he's done, Lukey. It's what he said. Yeah, it's what he said. FIFA.com, the website, interviews Maradona about who he regards as being the greater footballer, himself or Pele.
Oh,
right?
This has never come up before.
No, it's not his favourite topic of fucking conversation, is it? The question goes, there's a constant debate between Brazilians and Argentinians over whether Pelé or your good self is the world's best ever player. Is it possible to make a comparison, given that you played in completely different eras? Which is kind of the point,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah,
he
yeah,
should
yeah.
really listen to that. But he muddled his way through it anyway.
Of course he did.
Diego said, do you know what? I played in European football for 10 years while Pelé played in South America. Yes, he won World Cups and everything, but playing in Europe is something else entirely. Not that that makes me much better than him or anything like that. When I played, the man markers in Spanish and Italian football were like hunting dogs. They never left me alone. Pelé had Coutinho and Rivellino, who for me is one of the best ever, alongside him. So he had a little bit of help. But he goes, the best thing is he goes on to say, oh well, what matters is that when the people voted, he came second behind me. Nobody can take that away from me. And there was another vote in Brazil in which he came second behind Ayrton Senna. He needs to stop coming second.
Oh, you oh, bet.
Oh, you big silver medalist, Pelé.
My favourite bit about this story is when... The man markers in Spanish and Italian football were like hunting dogs. They never left me alone. In my head, Maradona gets up in the middle of the night and goes for a drink of water. And like, you know, Claudio Gentile just comes in with a massive two-footer on him. Have some of that!
Is it fair to say that he's robbed Pelé of his crown?
Is it fair to say that no one really cares?
Alfredo Di Stefano is better than both of them.
Oh, good, good. Right, I've got one. Do you want it?
Yeah. Go on, fill the time.
Southern League side Abingdon United, I believe that's in Oxfordshire actually, are blaming the club's bright new yellow home shirt for attracting wasps after a player was stung during a game.
It's what I would say.
Does there need to be a reason for that? I mean, people get stung all the time, don't they? Striker Anaclet Odihambo, Pete, you've blatantly made that name up to make it as difficult as possible.
That's great work. Well done.
Thanks, first time. Was the victim of the unwanted attention during the club's match against Frome this month. Frome's in Somerset. Geography fans. It's our new yellow tops, Odihambo told BBC Oxford. It's a little
it's
bit too yellow.
It's yellow tops.
It's a little bit too yellow. If the sun goes down a bit and there aren't as many bugs about, we'll be all right. I've been to the doctors to get some cream. Aberdeen United manager Andy Slater, and I quote, said, "The new shirt looks very smart, but I hope it will sting us a few results rather than stinging a few back."
Awful.
Zinger stinger. Reprehensible.
You can sting yourself right out of town, Slater.
Yeah, buzz off.
Insects can see in colour, and they have three-colour vision, but there is no evidence that wasps would be attracted to that, said George McGavin, Dr. George McGavin, from Oxford University's Museum of Natural History. Has he got nothing better to do to come on this? They may get a few beetles and aphids, but I'm sure it's quite safe.
No, don't mention beetles and aphids. Yeah, scare them shitless. Yeah. I've got the wasps on the back.
Yeah. Norwich City have never complained.
No.
Brazil have never complained.
Not to my knowledge.
And other teams in Europe.
Fact fans, slightly different, but all nonetheless related. If you see a swarm of bees, don't panic, you're perfectly safe, because bees only go in swarms when they're trying to find a new hive.
Yeah.
And when they go and find a new hive, they get as much honey up as they can before they go. They're so full that they can't sting you, so you're perfectly safe.
I was watching a documentary about bees this week. I really want to keep bees now.
Apparently it's all the rage.
Yeah.
Because when you smoke them, they get confused and they just start eating loads of...
It makes them docile.
Yeah, they eat the honey and then they fall asleep.
Two teams nicknamed the bees. Go.
Brentford.
Yes.
I don't know.
Barnet.
Oh.
The Barnet Bees.
Two powerhouses.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time.
Woo! All right.
And this week we have Laurie Cunningham, Brendan Batson and Cyril Regis.
The man we heard from at the top of the show.
That's right. Three magnificent men who, of course, play together at West Bromwich Albion. And
it's an unprecedented putting three in at once.
Well, and there's a reason for that.
They come as a unit.
Because they marked, truly did mark the beginning of a new era in British football. Because in the 1977 to 1978 season, it was the first time a big leading English club fielded three black players in the same team, which is just a ridiculous thought.
So late on, isn't it?
An unbelievable thought nowadays. And Regis said himself, you know, our presence was a radical statement. You know, here we were playing, not just playing, but playing well and helping to break down serious barriers in the First Division. Cunningham, Laurie Cunningham arrived first, who was bought by Johnny Giles. He was from Leighton Orient, cost £125,000 in March 77. Cyril Regis joined during the summer of 1977 and... Ron Atkinson, who took charge of West Brom, he took Brendan Batson, who was his captain at Cambridge United, to West Brom in early 1978. So this all kind of happened roughly 10 years after the Summer of Love.
Yeah, okay.
Which is always worth pointing out.
Every single one of them won the sperm race as well.
And so it's worth pointing out that these three players were often referred to as the 3 degrees back in the day. This was because Ron Atkinson, who was in charge of West Brom, of course, arranged, for some strange reason, to have a photo shoot with the black American soul singers, and they were wearing West Brom shirts, with the players were wearing fur coats.
I have no
idea why he did that. And, he took the players to see them perform in Birmingham, so he gave... his three men the nickname.
It's interesting that because after all that sort of shameful stuff that Atkinson said recently, I mean, he really was a real... I mean, it's not often you call him a pioneer in anything, really. Ron Atkinson, yeah. He was a pioneer in really sort of seeing through all the sort of stereotypical racism, which did exist in football.
Oh, hugely. Well, we'll touch on that,
it doesn't matter the colour of his skin. If they're good enough, they're in my team. And I think that's well, he did give him credit for that, really.
He said they could have been yellow, purple and have two heads so long as they could play and they were good lads. And they were... I think if they had two heads, yeah. The FA might have...
Contravene rules.
Might have an issue with that.
Well, as long as they've got two squad numbers.
But you get the picture.
Sort of.
Yeah. Whatever picture that may be. But, you know, it cannot be underplayed, the role Cunningham, Batson and Regis had as role models and inspiring young black footballers everywhere at the time. But unfortunately, you know, as perhaps you were touched upon there, Luke, just before, unfortunately they were subject to just terrible racist abuse. Well, any racist abuse is terrible, of course, but it was just unbelievable back in those days.
And not just on the pitch as well.
Well, this was at a time... I mean, you know, it's ridiculous to think of this now, but this was at a time when the National Front were openly recruiting outside of grounds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Regis remembered, he said, we would regularly have 10 to 15,000 people racially abusing us at every game.
Yeah.
And he said, and so he said, well, you know, how would I fight back? He said, well, I'd fight back through my talent.
Yeah.
When you've won the game, when you've played well, he said, that's our response, you know. But when Regis, I mean, again, this is just another example. When Regis was selected for the first time for the England squad, he received a bullet through the post, accompanied by the words, you'll get one of these through your knees if you step out on the Wembley turf.
Unbelievable.
And there was reports of Laurie Cunningham...
less than 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, only, but more than 30 years after, like, the great sort of, like, West Indian sort of...
Influx of
West Indian workers in the 50s, you know? Exactly. So I don't understand why 30 years later there's still a massive bloody problem.
Because people are brainless and idiots. And I think that, you know, if you look at all through sport and history, you've got, like, Jesse Owens. We had a bit of this because of the World Championship Athletics, recently.
Yeah.
You know, Jesse Owens, who really sort of kicked the door down and showed that, you know, black athletes were obviously, you know, among the very best in the world, if not the best. Then you had the Black Power salutes in the late 60s by the American athletes. And in a way, like Regis, Batson and Cunningham were sort of Britain's or England's version of that, given that football is our national sport.
Well, after...
Someone had to do it. You know, yeah. Someone had to be brave enough and go out and combat racism head on. And it's great that, you know, those guys
could have easily turned away from the game and thought, sod this. You know, I was about to say that Cunningham, during his time at Leighton Orient, there was reports that he had a knife thrown at him during one of the games.
Unbelievable.
I mean, they would have been well within their rights to go, do you know what, sod this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, absolutely. But on the flip side, there were people who thought, oh, this is just wonderful, you know. And sports journalist Bob Downing said, you know, people, you know, decent minded people were saying they were just a breath of fresh air, and they were. He said, you know, Cunningham had real flair. Cyril Regis was a power player, and Batson was your thinking man's footballer. So it's a different styles, you know. But they became role models for black football players everywhere. And Dion Dublin said he was inspired by them. Robbie Earle said that he said they paved the way for players like us. He said, if it wasn't for players like these, then I might never have considered a career in football, you know.
Well, I mean, it's it's obviously a lot easier now for young black players than it was, and they're largely a credit for that. I hope, one, that all the sort of players around now who get to play without prejudice and without fear of racism on the whole, but it's not perfect, like we just said about West Ham, owe a lot of credit to those guys for actually doing it. I mean, one of the worst things is that football is still, obviously, in Eastern Europe and stuff, but even in this country, I can't remember, I think it was 1991, right, Ron Knowles, who then I think was at Palace, was saying stuff like, I mean, he was widely derided for it, but he said it in the press, openly, oh yeah, well, I think black players haven't got any bottle and stuff like that, you know.
Did he?
Yeah, outrageous things like that, you know. So,
but I mean, he's been using the sort of words that Atkinson himself used.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what I mean? And the sort of behaviour that Lazio...
Exactly.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, there is enough examples nowadays.
The Spanish coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Brendan Batson said in the late 70s, going back to West Brom, he said, all this, it would just galvanise us into better performances. And in the 77-78 season, West Brom, they reached the FA Cup semi-final and qualified for the UEFA Cup. But the following season, when they'd really sort of, you know, settled in and the team were gelling, they looked as though they were destined for the First Division title. You know, they were top in January and they went unbeaten from October to February.
Mm-hmm.
They played great football. They had a memorable 5-3 win at Old Trafford, which somebody was saying to me the other day that they thought it was the best game they'd ever seen, you know. But unfortunately, there was an awful winter that year. And West Brom, they only played 4 games in 2 months. And because of cancellations and so on, and they had to play 25 games in 64 days after that. But Liverpool, who had under soil heating, and again, this shows just sign of the times, at Anfield, and a far deeper squad, they went on to win the league. And West Brom, they still finished third, though. It was very admirable. And although the three players, you know, Batson, Cunningham and Regis, they never won anything together, that's not the point we're making here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The point is their influence, it cannot be exaggerated.
Yeah.
And they just raised the political consciousness of so many footballers.
Yeah,
and played good football as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a token effort. You know
no,
what I mean?
this is it.
A decent football players.
No, absolutely.
Who played well and you know obviously absolutely deserved their place in the teams they played in.
Exactly, and I'm just going to go on and talk about them individually. You know, Brendan Batson, unfortunately, his playing career was cut short through a serious injury in 82, and he became an administrator at the PFA and won an MBE in the year 2000. Cyril Regis, more notably, won the PFA Young Player of the Year award in 1979, and he only won five full England international caps. Probably should have won more.
We met Cyril Regis recently, didn't we?
We did.
Good man.
Marvellous bloke.
Yeah, good bloke.
And he actually said he wanted to be in the Windsor.
Yeah, he did.
He said, I want to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he is.
He's a fucking big fella, I'll tell you.
Yeah, demanded to be in there. And you fell like pauses.
Well, someone we knew who also knows him was talking to him about it, and he said to us, oh, the Ramble Boys, oh yeah, I want to be in there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I said, Cyril, I've got you lined up.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you worry, pal. Yeah, exactly. Your name's going to be on the sheet.
Yeah.
And Regis, after West Brom, went on to play for Coventry City, Aston Villa, Wolves, Wycombe Wanderers, and Chester City. Man of the Midlands, yeah. You could say there.
Yeah.
And after his playing career finished, he did a variety of coaching roles. Acted as an agent a few times, including as he's an uncle to Jason Roberts.
Yeah.
He did some work with WaterAid charity and was given an MBE himself in 2008. Possibly the most successful of the three was Laurie Cunningham, and it was his move to Real Madrid in 1979 which broke up the three.
Was he the first Englishman to play for?
The first Englishman to play for Real Madrid.
Okay.
And, well, I mean, if he thought his abuse was bad in England, you know, he went there and it was pretty fierce. But he moved to Spain, and his first two seasons in Spain was a success. He played great football for them. And they did a league and cup double. Unfortunately, the season they knocked out the European Cup semi final, and he was overlooked by Ron Greenwood for the 1980 European Championship squad.
Hmm.
Slightly surprising, but he was a wonderful player, Laurie Cunningham, wonderful player. But unfortunately, after the first sort of couple of seasons in Spain, he had a few injuries, and you know, back in those days, you know, there he was abroad, a few injuries, he didn't have people to look after him as much as they do now.
Yeah.
And so his career, he kind of, after that, really went back to England on loan.
He went to Wimbledon, didn't he?
Well, later, he went to Manchester United on loan. He was re-signed on loan with Ron Atkinson. He played for them a season, and then he kind of became a bit of a journeyman throughout European sides, including Sporting Gijon, Marseille, Leicester City, Charleroi. Thank you. Charleroi. And he did play for the Crazy Gang. He was on the bench for the FA Cup final.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he went back to Spain after that to Rayo Vallecano. I think that's pronunciation.
Easy for you to say, mate.
Thank you very much, yeah. He helped them get back into the first division. They got promotion. But unfortunately, sadly, before he could make his return into the top division, Cunningham died in a car crash at the age of 33.
Tragic.
It really is. And Regis, Cyril Regis said about this, he said we were like two peas in a pod for that time at West Brom. He said Laurie reached only 60% of his talent. You know, what a player he would have been if he'd hit 80 or 90%.
Mm.
But he did say, you know, we made a big difference to the black kids in this country, and we cleared a path for those who came after us. And today, black players make up, I think it's just over 20% of professional football.
They're massively overrepresented compared to how many black people there are in the country.
Absolutely.
You know, proportion of the population.
So for footballing talent, for being pioneers, for being wonderful men.
Yeah.
Into the Dean Wendass Hall of Fame.
Welcome.
Batson, Cunningham and Regis.
We promise you, Cyril. We promise you.
And you delivered. Who's going to be the first black member of the Football Ramble? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com. And of course, get yourself to the website, thefootballramble.com, and that's all you need to know.
Yeah. It's looking good, isn't it, Marcus?
Marvellous.
We've got videos up there. We've got the South American football people.
You name it.
There's even a photo of myself and Danny Dyer on there.
There is, yeah. If you want to email us individually, it's pete@thefootballramble.com or Marcus@, or Luke@, or James@.
Thefootballramble.com.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Yeah, hello, goodbye.
I think we're all off to sign for Notts County. Bye. I'm a 12-year-old boy.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.